The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week is every week we're working real hard to give you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today we're going to talk about a topic that is way more controversial than it should be. Direct mail. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Does it not work? Is it old fashioned? And what you really need to do is buy a list of phone numbers and give it to a VA and have them auto dial 10,000 of them every day to talk to potential sellers? Or does it work better than ever now because people just don't get that much mail and yours kind of sticks out in their mailbox? The opinions in the real estate investor world are all over the place in terms of whether direct mail is a great way to buy properties or not. I come down real hard on the side of yes, but ... It's not just about the mail that you send. It's about what you do after that. And helping me to discuss this topic today is Mr. Damon Remy, founder of REI Black Book, cruncher of so much data on different marketing techniques and how they work. He is joining us from his home near St. Louis. Damon, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, thanks for having me. Look forward to the conversation. And I got to be honest, it shouldn't be a debate, right? Should this be such a controversial topic?
Well, but, you know why it's a debate. You know why it's a debate? Because there's 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 real estate investors out there who somehow got the idea that buying houses with direct mail means I go get a done-for-you postcard, I buy a list, I send it out, and then I just sit back and wait for the calls to roll in. And it didn't work. I spent $5,000 sending out that postcard, and it didn't work. So anybody who tells you it works sucks and should not be telling anybody how to do real estate. Like that's where that came from.
Yeah. All right. I'm with you on that. I get you. I can hear some investors. I've certainly seen it before. They come in and the question was always like, okay, well, where'd you get your list? What was the messaging? How'd you structure the follow-up? Right. All those types of things. So yeah, happy to get into it and discuss it today for sure.
So one of the things that we're going to maybe do today is drag some of the old school direct mail people into the 21st century where you don't actually have to print postcards and letters off your printer and then hand address them and put them in the mail, and thus it gets out when you have the time and energy to do that. And then the other thing that we're going to try and do is sort of lay out what the whole picture is of what makes effective direct mail. And there might be people who are like, yeah, I don't want to do all that. That sounds too complicated. But I am here to tell you that, I don't know, 80% of the deals I've ever gotten in my entire life, and that's like something like 2,000 deals, have come from some sort of direct mail. So it does in fact work. Now, as I kind of said in your introduction, your big superpower, your big advantage is that you have been working with thousands of investors for dozens of years. and you have a ton of data. You can watch what they're doing. You can see what the effects are. So what was it that made you realize that just sending out a couple of postcards wasn't going to make the deals?
Well, I mean, there's tons of data that talk about how many touches, first of all, how many touches that you need, right? Mm-hmm. I think really, if I step back, let me go about it this way. So first of all, yes, I have visibility into lots of investors' businesses. You know, we kind of run the automation side of things. We help them manage and track and all those things, right? So we do have visibility, and direct mail is still one of, it is the leading by far, number one source to get deals, right? It still is. Even with all of the AI technology and the online ads and all of the things. And I think a lot of that is because of the cost. It's not that complex. It's fairly, it can be pretty simple to get some direct mail and get some mail out, without a lot of complication. And so I think a lot of folks still get intimidated by all the online stuff and everything else. Don't get me wrong. That stuff does work as well. But what really works is all of it in sync and orchestrated together for sure. But recognizing and paying attention to every conversation I have, I go to masterminds with some of the, what would probably be called the top 10% of investors in the country. And I'm sitting there privately listening to them talk about their businesses, and every large investor that I know, direct mail is a significant part of their business, mm-hmm. a significant part, not just a, hey, we try direct mail every now and then, or we've got that direct mail thing over there. Mm-hmm. Direct mail is the old plow horse, right? Right now, I know there's probably AI tractors that'll just go automatically plow the field today, and that sounds sexy and it sounds cool. But at the end of the day, direct mail is still the old plow horse, and it just flat out still works if done correctly.
Because at the end of the day, deals are not made with numbers or contracts or houses. They're made with people. Like if you can't get that connection with that person, nothing else is going to happen. And when we think about, like, you know, what age are people who own houses and are getting ready to sell them? They are not 25-year-olds. You know, they are 50 to, you know, 80 years old. And those of us who might fall at the very, very low end of that age range, we're very comfortable with mail, right? I mean, did you not write to your camp friends during the wintertime when you didn't get to see them? Like, were there not letters that went back and forth between you and other people? Your grandma?
So I might be what's considered a hoarder. You'd probably have to talk to my wife to confirm that. But I'm willing to take a picture in my basement. I can show you that I still have notes that were passed back and forth in junior high, for God's sake.
I keep
everything, and it's crazy whenever every now and then you'll get that moment of nostalgia, and you go bust open the box, and my wife's like, why did you keep that letter or that note? That's from your buddy Will. It's not even from one of your quote unquote girlfriends or anything. It's like your buddy Will wrote you a note and you kept it for. Now, I am on the very low end of that because I did just turn 50 this year. But yeah, direct mail still works. And in fact, I mean, probably one of the things I would tell most people, and what you're hitting on there is a really important point. Sometimes we actually want to do what's most convenient or what we think is most convenient for us instead of what's most convenient for your market, for the target market. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the clients we had one time, is a good guy, loved him. He's an amazing dude, really good guy. Came in and he had spent 20 years plus in TV advertising, selling TV ads, ad space really. And so he was a real estate investor. Long story short, was getting started, and he's like, "I'm going to run TV ads." I was like, "Okay, great, run TV ads." But he said, "Well, I'm gonna make them text me though." Like, that's the only, like, I'm like, well, you can try to make them do whatever you want, but I promise you, they're going to want to call. Like, so you got to meet your audience where they're at. And he came back, I remember it was probably 2 or 3 months later, and he came back. He's like, "Hey, man, that forcing the texting didn't really work. I switched to phone calls," and he was blown up. He did very well with the TV ads after he had them call. But the point is, you got to meet your audience where they're at, mm-hmm. not where you want them to be.
Mm-hmm. And again, and we're gonna actually have to take a break and come back and dig into this further afterwards. Most people who've had huge failures with their marketing have a problem in one of four areas, and y'all can write this down if you're not in your car driving. You can write this down because people ask me to diagnose why did my mail not work all the time, and it comes down to one of four things. It was the message. It was the medium. So maybe your message was okay, but you put it on a postcard that was black on red paper, and it was almost impossible to read. And also, you tried to pack so many words onto it that you had to put an 8-point type, which means not only was it hard to read because of the color scheme, but now anybody over the age of 40 has to go get their flashlight and their glasses to read your postcard. It's going in the garbage. Okay? So the message, the medium, or the list, one of those three things. Plus, the next thing I'm going to ask you is, what about your follow-up? Because people will say, well, I mean, I got like 8 phone calls, but everybody wanted too much money. Oh, okay, so you were just like, okay, no thanks, and that was the end of the conversation. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm waiting for somebody who's got a really good deal. It's one of those four things. So what we're going to really talk about for the rest of the show is kind of how to get those things, and particularly the follow-up part, nailed down in such a way that your direct mail actually does well for you. If you have questions about direct mail or automation, you can give us a call here in the studio at 877-772-9658. 877-772-9658 is the number to call. You can also send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com, or I demand you text
513-432. Yeah, exactly. Let's see how that works.
513-432-4961 is our text line. 513-432-4961. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox, talking today to Damon Remy about how to actually make your direct mail work. And that seems weird because y'all think of Damon as being the REI Black Book guy who's all about automation and websites and texts and all of those sorts of things. But they're related, right, Damon?
That they are. You know, the number one mistake that people do with direct mail, you know, and I agree with you, by the way, the message, the medium, the list, the follow-up, right? But they send the postcards without having a follow-up plan in place first, right? Then they're like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. But yeah.
So, well, let's talk about a follow-up plan, because it is really frustrating. I've done enough experimenting with mail over the years that I've done that thing where I think I've got the most beautiful mailing piece in the whole world and the best possible list, and I send it out and it is just crickets. And I spent a lot of money sending that out, and it is just crickets. So let's talk about what the follow-up looks like. If I don't get a response, do I just say, oh, well, I better either throw away the postcard or throw away the list, or there's something else to do in the meantime?
So this is where consistency will beat intensity, right? So the first thing I would tell you to do is make sure anytime you're going to be doing any sort of testing and you're going to switch out a postcard or anything like that, you know, you got to look at the data size, right? The data list size. Are we going to send out 5,000 or are we sending out 500? I would much rather see you send 500, right? Like send 500 10 times. Honestly, the truth be told, I always use the number 3,000. So send that 500 6 times so that you can start testing it. I can tell you from the data, you're going to start seeing a noticeable increase around that 4th, 5th, 6th touch, even in the postcard, even though they don't respond. And so don't go out depending on your budget, but most folks don't have enough budget to go out and send 30,000 postcards, you know, six months in a row, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd much rather see you chunk it down so that you can do that, so that you can, again, the consistency over time versus the quote unquote intensity, so that we're not just, you know, dropping a big mail piece. And of course,
I love that, because using that smaller list also allows you to really drill down on the list.
If you
don't need to send out 5,000 this month, you can say, okay, well, which 500 have maybe more than one problem? Maybe they are behind on their payments, and also they have building orders, or which ones are filing an eviction and are out of state owners, or it allows you to do more than one thing at a time. And I tell people that all the time. I would rather have an awesome list of 500 than an okay list of 5,000.
Yeah, it's very funny. I always ask, well, and here's the other thing too, and this kind of goes even further down the track a little bit, but I think people will still understand the point. You know, I always ask the questions like, hey, which list do you want? I've got list A and I got list B, right? List B, it cost me $1,000, and I've got, and again, for direct mail, this is probably not going to necessarily be as important, but it's like list B is $1,000 and it's 1,000 names, right? Mm-hmm. Or I've got, right, list A, right? So our list A and list B here. The other list, right, it cost me a dollar, and I've got, you know, 10 names. Which one do I want, right? The question, everybody kind of gets caught up in that, but the answer, like, you got to pay attention. You got to literally track. The tracking for your direct mails, where so many people mess up, they're not paying attention. First of all, they put their dang mobile phone number on it. Like, that kills me whenever they put their cell phone on there. I get it. You want to be responsive, but can we track all the way through to a closed deal so we can actually start attributing which list it came from, which postcard did that come from, you know, so that we can repeat success, because success leaves clues. And if we pay attention, we can repeat success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So smaller list, maybe more thought through about, you know, are the kind of people I'm reaching out to even more likely to be motivated? And also, do they likely have the kind of property I want? That's another really important question to look at.
Yeah. Do they even have a house?
Yeah. Do they have a house?
And,
you know, if I'm a wholesaler, I'm actually looking for a different kind of property than if I'm a retailer, or if I'm somebody who wants to do, like, buy property subject to, so I can rent them out. Like, it's people don't put enough thought into that. They're like, hey, anybody who's got a deal, I'm willing to talk to them. And any list provider can literally bring it down to, like, what's the average house price in the zip code? What's the average square footage? Yeah. What's the demographics of the, like, they can bring it down to a list that would really meet your criteria for what you're looking for, and also still be motivated sellers. So back to our example here, I've sent out my first 500 postcards, because we decided not to send out 3,000. We decided to send out 5. And I'm sitting here waiting for the phone to ring. Is there anything else I should be doing in the meantime? I mean, you said I needed a plan. I shouldn't have sent these out without a plan. What's my plan?
Well, before you send, sincerely, if I drew this out, sometimes you start with the end in mind, right? Not sometimes. That's really realistically what we should do. So we got to ask ourselves, okay, if the phone rings, what happens when the phone rings, right? Am I prepared for that call? Am I going to know, right? Am I going to know that it's a call that's coming in from that direct mail piece? If I miss the call, do I know that I have a follow-up plan, right? Do I know that it's going to go to voicemails? Do I know that it's going to be tracked? Do I know that there's a system that's going to automatically text back or message, right? So that system piece, that follow-up piece, is really, like, imperative, because, again, we can't, you know, the best case scenario is if you can afford to do it, you sit there waiting patiently and you do nothing else but stare at your phone so that you can talk to them live. But something tells me that you're probably going to have a life. You probably have other things going on. And so therefore you need to take into consideration what happens if you miss the call, what happens if you don't pick up, and how is it going to pick up? Now I'm going to go one step back to you just to kind of hit your point about that smaller list. Mm-hmm. You can also use, this is where the geeky side of Damon comes out, because I do love technology at the end of the day, but you can use predictive AI today to shrink that list as well. Mm-hmm. Right. So the AI is absolutely really good at looking at and finding patterns and you know, we've got data sets where you upload 40 years of transactional history and can actually start recognizing and finding those patterns of properties that sold wholesale previously. And it's like, okay, what were those patterns? And once it starts recognizing that, now we can go in and actually create a scoring model so that we can actually come in and say, what's the likelihood that these properties are going to sell? And let the AI almost, what we used to do, you know, what we used to call list stacking, the AI can do that much better than we can, right? But so you can get the small list. And the reason I want to have a small list is because, first of all, I'd much rather see you do a small list so that you can commit to multiple mailings. That's the other thing, too, that I would do is I would commit to a budget ahead of time. Don't start unless you can do this for at least 3 months, but I'm telling you 6 months is going to be a lot better than three. So what happens is I go and I'm like, all right, I saved up all my money. I'm going to do a big mailer. All right, then I can't do the next mailer in month two. It's like set your budget aside so that you can actually plan your entire direct mail campaign across the life cycle of that particular campaign. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's just a few things to probably set yourself up for a little bit better success. Have your budget set aside. Make sure your follow-up plan is in place. Make sure you've got, obviously there's tools and technology that can help you with the follow-up and things like that. And then, you know, certainly don't discredit the fact that now you got to be ready to answer the phone and have a conversation and be ready to talk to people and be prepared to solve problems, mm-hmm. right? So how do we solve their problem? How do we listen to those problems? There is an art to how do we do that on the phone, right? Mm-hmm. So make sure you're prepared. In fact, I might go one step further here and just tell you guys, look, go to Zillow, go look at all the for sale by owners, and just start calling people right now that are free that you didn't pay to make the phone ring. Just start calling them and just talking to folks that are selling their house. Talk to as many people as you can to sell your house. Now, you may not find a deal that way. You know, if you the best case scenario is you accidentally find a deal when you're talking to those folks that are selling their property by owner on Zillow. But get used to and get comfortable talking to sellers on the phone and solving problems.
Okay, Say it all the way, David. Say it all the way. Get used to having the phone hung up on you. Get used to people saying, "You want to pay me what?" Like get over it. Like that's how you get over your fear of talking to people, is you just keep
do more of it.
Talking to people. And I'll tell you, yeah. I did a workshop a couple of years ago that was like a deal finding kind of 6-week class where people had assignments that they had to talk to a certain number of people. And what finally got them over, because I mean, the first 2 weeks people were like, no, I didn't talk to anybody because, you know, I didn't really see any deals in Zillow that I was interested in. I was like, that's not the point. It doesn't matter.
No, right.
I said, okay.
I wouldn't buy that house.
Exactly. Exactly. Your job this week is you have to make 25 phone calls. You have to tell 25 people what you would pay for their house, and you have to get 25 no's. If you get a yes, you failed. You have to get 25 no's, and that kind of broke them through on the whole, but I don't want to tell people that I can only pay them half what they're asking for their houses, which you have to do all the time.
Well, then they probably don't like making money in real estate investing. That's the, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, there's probably another job for you waiting that you don't have to talk to people, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. You also said something that's so important. I'm hoping people noted it down. I'm gonna back up to it because I'd let you keep talking. But this idea of how is the phone going to be answered is so huge. I just learned through observation 20 years ago that if somebody called and they didn't talk to someone, they talked to a voicemail, right? They didn't have any feel as to whether anyone had gotten the message or was going to call back. They were very likely to then pick up the next postcard and call it.
100.
And then the next one and call it. And then, you know, the bulletin, the billboard by the side of the road, they were going to call it, right? They were going to do all of these things. But if they were under the impression that somebody was listening and was like, yes, I'm going to call you back. I'm just busy right now. They waited for the next call. So back in the day, because we don't have to do anymore, because you mentioned that now we can do things like just automatically text back with a, hey, I'm on the phone right now. tell me what property address you're calling about, and I'll call you as soon as I'm done seeing the house or whatever your reason's going to be. Back in the day, yep. we poured it to an answering service. And I'm telling you that that answering service, talking to people, saying, hey, this is Vina's office, how can I help you? And then just asking three questions, you know, like, what's the address? What are you looking for? It is that flexible? And then, hey, she's going to call you as soon as she gets back from looking at houses. People would pick up the phone when I called because they hadn't called nine other people.
Yeah, I think there's zero doubt. Like, I mean, you could probably go interview any of the 10 biggest investors that that run direct mail campaigns or really spend money on marketing in any channel. I think most channels, this is all is going to still be true, is that live answer is by far the absolute best, right? You're going to get, you know, better response. In fact, I can show you the stats on this. If you respond within 1 minute, you're 391% more likely to convert that lead. If you respond to them, and that doesn't mean that you have to respond, it doesn't mean your tools can respond. Your likelihood of connecting with that lead increases 391%, so you can actually have a conversation. If you wait so much as a day, that likelihood goes down to 17%, mm-hmm. right? And in fact, if you wait from 1 minute to 2 minutes, your chances are cut in half, mm-hmm. right? Even so, from 391% to it's like 150% or something like that. It's kind of, but it's so important that they feel like they are engaged and that they've been heard. Now, live answer is definitely going to be better, but barring that you hire somebody and I know that the question out there, probably everybody's asking themselves like, okay, Damon, dude, you're the technology guy. Can I have AI answer the phone? We've tested this. We've certainly tested this. And the short answer is, technically speaking, yes, the AI is pretty amazing. Yes, I can have AI bots answering the phone. It can actually engage in conversation. However, whenever we go back in and we listen to the calls, we still see a high percentage of people that are frustrated and aggravated that they're talking to a bot in the demographic. So if you send direct mail and they're now calling, then that demographic is probably not ready to talk to a bot. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm running different ads or different medium, then maybe the bots might be better positioned. But most of the time, at least what we've seen, I mean, and we can literally go in and listen to the calls and have, it's kind of funny sometimes, to be very honest, having these people argue with bots, and why they're talking to a bot. But people do still get a bit frustrated. I think that's only going to get better because in everyday life, we're all talking to bots more. We're all engaging with AI. So I think as a society, we're becoming more and more comfortable with it. So I think it's going to get better, especially in the next 12 months. But for today, a live person is still going to be the absolute best way to convert that person. Because again, we're dealing with people with problems. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, they need help, right? That pain, you know, at the end of the day, whenever they call you and they don't get a solution, or at least in any inkling that there's going to be solution to their pain and there's going to be relief from their pain, then they're going to pick up the phone. They're going to call the next postcard, the next up, the next in line, because again, the pain is real. Yeah, right? And that, for the right people that we want, right?
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard, you know, you're the sixth person I've called and you're the only one who's picked up the phone.
It's like, oh yeah,
it's like, and I think part of that is people like they kind of want to hear what the voicemail says before they talk to the person, because what if the person's mad and going to yell at them? And okay, just pick up the phone and get yelled at. It's not gonna kill you. And honestly, most of the people aren't calling to yell at you, and you can just have a conversation.
Yes.
So Dave,
go ahead.
We need to take a quick break. Hold that thought. I think it's probably an important one, but we're going to take a quick break. We're also going to invite listeners to join in on the conversation about making direct mail work at 877-772-9658, at our text line at 513-432-4961, or just via email, vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. I'm going to get keelhauled if I don't remember to tell everybody about the Cincinnati RIA meeting tomorrow night. This is our nationwide online chapter meeting. So if you are listening, you can attend. Just get a seat at CincinnatiRIA.com. The topic is lease options. Hannah Flegel, who was on the show 2 weeks ago, I guess, is going to be laying out her whole thing that she does when she leases lease options properties. She even helps her tenant buyers with credit repair so that they can actually buy the property. She's got a real good system, and you can come to that by going to CincinnatiRIA.com. Also, while you're on the calendar, look up a couple of other things. Sunday night, the Money Markets 101 Playbook. That is a members-only class, but it is so cheap that it's so cheap to become a member that you should probably just do that. First class was last week, and it was about, I don't know, like the fractional banking system, how inflation affects what house prices and costs and rents are, and just a lot of stuff about what happens out there in the world that we don't actually control that affects what kind of real estate strategies we should be doing. It is a 7-week class. This week's class is about personal and business credit, and I listened in on last week's class. It was really, really good. You should really think about checking it out. And then next Wednesday is our Summit Investors Help Night, and the topic is using AI to make your business easier and better. And I don't know who all is going to be there to help people understand how to use AI better. Damon Remy is going to be one of them.
I'm happy to.
it's literally like no topic, like no lecture. You just call in and ask questions that you have, and people who know how to do it are there to answer it. Damon, we are going to go to the phones and talk to Danny on line one from Cincinnati. Danny, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Damon. I had to unmute. That seems familiar. Hi.
Hi, Danny.
I have a question, because what you guys were saying resonated with me right before the break. I have a lot of background in talking, and most people that know me know I love to do that. And when we were in the call center for years, it was, oh, we just wish AI could help us out with this. And the best we got to was recording at the beginning. But you could always tell. It's not the live person, like he was saying. My question goes to these mailings, because it's just now what I'm exploring in, you know, the wholesaling range. Do you find that it's more personable to still use live people, or are you finding that AI is catching up on this side?
To answer phones or to create the marketing itself?
No, for the direct mailers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to like create the mail. So,
yeah.
Damon, that's a great question because, boy, a lot of people really do get hung up on, well, I don't know how to write a good message.
Yeah, so AI is amazing at writing content for sure, right? But here's where most folks kind of get caught up is they don't understand how to extract their own tone, their own voice, so that the AI then sounds very generic, right? I use a MAP system. Really, it's literally called a MAP system. It stands for memory, assets, and then prompting, okay? So you want to create, especially like ChatGPT or Gemini, those Claude is amazing too. All of these AI engines can do this, but you want to create a memory so that you've got context. It actually has context of other conversation you've had. So create projects, folders in ChatGPT as an example for different topics. So I've got like, for instance, I've got a, you know, if I'm going to be marketing an REI Black Book, then I've got an REI Black Book project folder. Then you want to upload assets. There's really three key assets that I personally like to use. One I call the source code. That's basically just a brain dump of like who you are, your voice, your style, your tone, you know, your personal preferences, your origin story, all of that thing. Then you create what I call the copywriting legends document. This is kind of ironic, but what you do is you can create that copywriting legends document. You go ask AI. You simply ask AI, say, hey, who are the top 10 people you were asked to model when writing copy? And it'll actually come back and tell you, hey, here's the top 10 copywriters that I'm being asked to model. Then you do what's called a deep research prompt. Take those 10 people and say, hey, AI, I want you to go create a training document, a framework that I could teach anyone to write just like these 10 people. That'll create a copywriting legends document. It's pretty cool. And then we finally create a brand Bible. Our brand Bible is everything about our business. If you've got more than one business, you'll have more than one brand Bible. Okay. Now, whenever you upload those assets into the memory folder inside of your ChatGPT or any of the other ones, right? Gemini or Claude or anything. Okay. Your copywriting is going to be 10,000 times stronger. If you do that, if I just go to ChatGPT and I'm not a copywriter, and so therefore ChatGPT, I've just been chatting with it for a couple of years, asking it for the latest and greatest cookie recipes, then it's probably not going to just magically figure out how to write persuasive copy, right? Mm-hmm. So follow the legends, direct your AI engines to the experts, and legends, like, and I'm, when I talk about legends, I'm talking about like Gary Halbert, right? Joseph Sugarman, like Dan Kennedy, Ogilvy, like those are the folks that you want to actually model and lean, tell the AI to go learn from the experts. But now you're going to get better results if you do what I just told you, even if you go in and you could theoretically today, you could say, hey, go write a postcard as if you're Dan Kennedy. But I actually want to remove that it goes to everywhere on the internet and finds all the things about Dan Kennedy. I want it to actually go build a copywriting framework that shows me the frameworks and the strategy and tactics behind Dan's copywriting style, so that the AI can copy that, and you'll get better results for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing you said about, you know, also uploading like what your business is about, I think is really important too, because I'm pretty sure people are uploading postcards and letters that they've seen from other people to get their results, because it's like everything is the same, and a lot of it's really bad. A lot of the direct mail I get is so bad. I'm sorry, this.
So can we go up? Can we go upstream further?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we got to go upstream further, even for that. So once we do that, and whenever I create my brand Bible, I'm also going to go create my customer avatar, my ideal customer profile, whatever you want to call it. Basically, that is just, so in REI Black Book, I've got, first of all, you'll have multiple customer avatars. Every real estate investor, look, you've got probate Pam, you've got foreclosure Fred, you've got all of these different avatars. For me, I talk to newbie Ned, so somebody that's never done a deal and they're just getting started in real estate investing. That conversation, that tone, what their problem they have is much different than seasoned Sam. Mm-hmm. Seasoned Sam's over here. He's got a whole different set of problems than newbie Ned. Seasoned Sam has been doing deals, and I know you guys are thinking about real estate investors. I'm just telling you, this is the world I live in every single day of how to start. I know you guys are talking to motivated sellers, but I'm talking to seasoned Sam over here. Well, seasoned Sam has different problems than newbie Ned, and it's the exact same thing. If you're talking to, you know, probate Pam as the same way you're talking to foreclosure Fred, well then guess what? Your message is not going to land. So now your message doesn't match your market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of things like that you have to do. And now AI is amazing at helping you articulate those customer avatars. What used to take a week or 2 weeks, man, I mean, I can get done in 30 minutes today. It's mind boggling.
Yes. Very true. So Danny, that gets your question answered.
It does, and now it makes me go, oh my gosh, I knew some of that. It kind of made my mind explode on the things I hadn't considered, that really hearing it said out loud are like, wow, that's kind of basic on the next step to take, but had never crossed my mind, even beyond the mailers, to
well,
be honest.
And it's important because, as Damon said at the beginning, you're also not just doing one outreach. And I think people doing mail try to make every single piece of mail do all of the lifting for the whole campaign.
Yeah. It's, right.
It's like they try to, it's like, I'm going to send Bob a postcard, to buy his house. That is not why we send out direct mail. I do not send direct mail to Bob to buy his house. I send
direct mail on my personal home, and I will tell you, it's kind of funny to look and say, either AI made that, and they say put everything on it, or they are very ADHD, which I can absolutely appreciate, but woo, every thought process they had went on to this little tiny piece of paper.
Well, when you have six pieces of mail to do, you know, month after month, it's easy to keep going in with different benefits to see which one is going to land. Because sometimes it's not full, all cash, quick closing. Sometimes it's the one that says, I can buy your house even if you owe too much.
Right.
Sometimes it's I can buy your house and let you stay there for a few months if that would help. You don't know which one it is, and you don't have to crowd it all onto one 6x4 postcard.
Yeah. tired landlords, keep your cash flow and
exactly.
Get rid of the tenants.
Exactly.
Right. It's all kinds of benefit-driven stuff that we just get so caught up. And quite frankly, everybody just thinks it's like, oh, well, if they just want quick cash. If I went further in the process, I would talk about a three option letter of intent. It's like, you know, when we started creating three option letters of intent and using those for our students, it was very eye opening that because you just think they're going to go and accept the highest quote unquote cash back to them. And that's not always the case, right? When you're creating those options. And so it just goes further to prove that we think we know what they want. But that's not always the case. We know what we want and we know what we would do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mistake you make is assuming that your target is going to do what you would do. But you are typically not your target audience.
Very, very true. The number of people who have accepted the lower cash offer rather than the twice as much terms offer that I made them would stun you. Like, seriously, you would rather have $50,000 cash than $100,000 paid to you over the next 10 years. So, yes, don't think for your seller. That rule is don't think for your seller.
On that note, I will say thank you so much for answering my questions, and I'm very happy I can go back and listen to this again because there was a lot of information in a very short span that I'm going, I need to be able to recall that, but yeah. I will definitely be going back and listening again.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Danny.
Thanks, Danny.
And speaking of a lot of information in a very short period of time, the thing that I have not said that I probably should have said earlier in the show is that on May the 1st, Damon and I are teaching an all-day class together on direct mail automation, follow-up, specifically for people who are looking for creative finance deals. If you're looking to do subject twos, if you're looking to do owner financing, master leases with option to buy, anything like that. Not that it would not also work for finding wholesale deals, but it's the first day of the 3-day Creative Finance Summit that's going on in Atlanta on March 1st through 3rd. And the reason that I am telling you all this is that in 2 weeks is Fund Drive for WMKV. And you know, I'm never the get the tote bag kind of Fund Drive person. Have a coffee cup. If for your pledge of only $54 a month, you can have a coffee cup. Nope. You're going to pledge and you are going to get a seat at the Creative Finance Summit. And this is the first year where we have really, really tackled the idea of how do you find the people who are going to do the creative deals with you. And Damon and I are on a mission to drag the creative finance community into the modern era. Because there's a lot of very smart creative people who are going to be there. You know, Pete Fortunato, Sam Worf, lots of folks whose name you would know, who are still teaching and doing things very manually. And there's no reason that we can't apply all the stuff that we know about mailings and follow-ups and automation and keeping your data on a computer instead of in a notebook. To the creative finance world. So I'll be sending out an email the day before the fund drive. There will only be a limited number of these seats available for a pledge to WMKV, and y'all need to jump on it, and you need to get to Atlanta on May the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
I was about to say, I want to ask the dates because you said March 1st. Oh. I was like, hey, hold up. Wait a minute.
Yeah,
I'm blocked off May 1st.
So. May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Atlanta.
So they got plenty of time to plan is what you're saying.
Yes. And we might even have, if they absolutely can't come out, we may even have an option where they can watch it on Zoom. Although you should come out. This is one of those events that you should really come out for. Because just hanging around with these people who've been doing creative stuff for years and years and years is very inspiring and very educational. So Damon, we've got 2 minutes left and we got through like two of the 6 or 8 questions we were going to cover. What is the thing that you wish we had gotten to that we have not been able to get to?
I think let's see. I mean, everybody kind of gets caught up whenever they hear my name and they're like, oh, he's going to talk about software tools. And I really want to drive home, guys. You have to have the system. A system is a strategy. It's tactics. It's a defined process. And then you apply tools, and the tools will help you automate, simplify, and manage the system. But if you just go in with no clear strategy, no clear tactics, not a defined process, and well, you know, quite frankly, you're kind of going to get what you plan for, and it's going to be random, and it won't be, you know, what we're in all of us in this business to create repetitive outcomes, predictable outcomes. And the only way to do that, guys, is a system, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking software tools, although I love software. I do. Mm-hmm. But a tool doesn't create discipline. A tool does not create strategy. A tool does not create process. So make sure you're definitely focused on the entire system and design it so that you can have an intentional outcome.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add to that, Damon, for our newer investors who might be listening and going, well, that's all great, but I wouldn't know how to design a system because I'm not sure what all the moving pieces of this are now that you guys have talked about things like text responders and 6 pieces of mail and a stacked list. That's where your community comes in. That's where going out and being around people and talking to people who've been doing this for years and can just say, oh, well, that's easy. Do this. Helps you create that first system that allows you to go out and start doing things and then building your own system. Because as you get more experience, you start saying, oh, I see what needs to change here. So Damon, appreciate you.
Yeah.
And, looking forward to seeing you actually next week on the Summit Help Night call on Wednesday night, but also, of course, at the Creative Finance Summit on May 1st through 3rd.
Yeah, and if you're stuck with those systems, remember, you can copy systems from other people.
Copy other
people. So you might be able to do that on May 1st, is just copy some systems.
That's right. All right, so we will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate. Until then, happy investing.